First off, I've got to have a look at the 48-team World Cup. Obviously, I mean, to say it's got a mixed reaction is one way to put it, I suppose. And there's a fair few people that are looking at it as a fairly negative. But I'm just wondering what your opinion was when it was first announced, Peter.
Well, my opinion on it is that, you know, the World Cup has always been in a state of development and expansion ever since the very first tournament. And for me, it's just sort of a natural progression. I really don't see too much of a problem in expanding the tournament from 32 to 48. I mean, we're still going to get a high-quality knockout round, for example, and the best team is still going to win it. But what it will do, and this is where the positive aspect comes into it for me, it will give an awful lot more opportunity to developing football nations and who can't afford governmental spending on their football, you know, to share some prize money, to get some vital experience, and, you know, altogether to drive up the level of international football, to make sure that, you know, teams who qualify for the first time in 2026 have more experience and have more expertise in dealing tournaments from there on in. I still expect the best countries, your Germanys, your Frances, your Spains, they're still going to dominate the latter stages of the tournament. But by just giving the opportunity for some of these more emerging football nations the opportunity to get there, I think it can be a largely positive thing for everybody.
Is it wrong of me to sort of base some of my opinions off the Euros? Because I looked at that and I thought it wasn't one of the finest tournaments we've seen in recent years. There were a couple of games there that did seem to be the sort of dead rubber ties. And I look at the World Cup and I think maybe, you know, it's just one of those where it could be too much when we look at football now.
Well, you would say that even in the Champions League these days, you tend to get some cagey ties. I think if somebody came down from Mars and had a look at Real Madrid against Manchester City, for example, in the two-legged match in the Champions League last season, you know, they would have a hard time, you know, seeing that as one of the examples of an elite football tournament. You know, two dreadfully boring matches. And I think it's just reflective, really, of the kind of the style of tournament football that we have at the moment is largely defensive. And it does mean that a lot more games are drawn and a lot and much fewer risks are taken. But who knows? You know, FIFA and the president Infantino, they're going to develop a way over the next 8-9 years to ensure that games can't be drawn, for example, in the last group stage match to ensure that the two teams can go through. They're going to develop ways to make sure that excitement factor stays in it and that teams aren't just playing for the draw. So, you know, the Euros 2014 expanded Euros, yes, again, some of the games weren't exactly world beaters, let's be honest. And you know, if you watch Portugal the whole way through, you would have had a hard time identifying them as winners from the beginning. But, you know, that's just the way tournament football is at the moment. And, you know, for every boring match, we'll hope that we'll get something approaching a quality one.
Yeah, that is very true indeed. And one other thing I have to look at is qualification. I mean, I have to admit, Peter, I look at a lot of these qualifiers now and they do seem very, very drab affairs. I mean, can we hope for at least some differential in the qualifications for getting through to a World Cup now? Because you would think for the very top teams, it's going to become easier than ever to get into the World Cup now.
For the top teams right now, you're right, it is a bit of a cakewalk. And I do think that FIFA has shot itself in the foot with the way it manages the international calendar. I mean, football shuts down for 2 weeks, and it's very hard to get people G'd up in any country, not just in England, but in any country, to get them G'd up for qualification matches. And that's reflected in attendances. It's reflected in the intensity of the matches. You know, you're kind of going through the motions. For 2026, not an awful lot is going to change. The preliminary plans have 16 European teams rather than 13 European teams, which are currently in the World Cup. So only three more teams will get through. And if you have a look at the standard of teams that didn't get through to, you know, the European Championships, for example, you're talking the likes of Denmark, you're talking the likes of Serbia, you're talking about, you know, good traditional football countries that I don't think we'll have many minnows from Europe going on to the World Cup. There will be still, you know, established football nations. Where it is going to get interesting is in the Americas. Because we did have some quotes from the Venezuelan Football Federation president who said that Gianni Infantino, the FIFA president, favours merging the North American Confederation with the South American one to come up with a unified qualification process for 2026. So that would mean the likes of the United States and Mexico will be going up against the likes of Brazil and Argentina. So we'd probably get 16 teams combined from those two confederations, but everybody will be in the qualification process together. So it might be interesting to see the next generations of Messis and the next generations of Neymars, play their qualification matches in the United States and vice versa.
Certainly very interesting to see on that front as well. And Peter, one thing I looked at when I was thinking about this is where the sort of World Cups can be held, because it's going to be a massive ask for a lot of countries to come up with 48 training bases. And is it going to be one of those now where only sort of established sort of countries with, you know, huge amounts of infrastructure can actually put on a World Cup now?
I think so, yeah. The front runner at the moment for the 2026 tournament is the United States. And when you think the number of college football teams and the number of MLS teams and the number of, you know, professional sports teams that they have, there should be no problem. They could probably, you know, put 48 teams into training grounds tomorrow morning if they had to. So it should be no problem to do it in 8-9 years' time. Elsewhere, China is obviously a contender for the 2026 World Cup, because obviously it's going to be the Asian Confederation in 2022 in Qatar. But, you know, like I said, the front runner is going to be the United States. And in the future, then you're going to be looking at, you know, maybe China could eventually have its turn at hosting this tournament. It would rule out, I know we had the World Cup in South Africa, we had the World Cup in Brazil, but I don't think these kind of, let's call them developing nations, are going to be equipped to deal with 48 training bases. There's also the option, maybe, of having some neighbouring countries house some teams in the preparation for the tournament. For example, if it was held somewhere in Europe, let's say it was held in Germany, for example, you could have some teams flying in from France for their matches. You could have some teams flying in from Italy, which means that, you know, you're not necessarily putting all 48 teams based within that country, but you could have them, kind of on 2-3 hour flights from countries not too far away. I mean, when you think about the World Cup in Brazil, teams were having to fly, you know, that country's as big as a continent. You know, they're having to fly 2-4 hours from training bases to match and from matches back to training bases. So, you know, footballers are accustomed to this kind of travel.
Well, certainly very excited to see what happens as well. Pete, absolute pleasure having you here on the Daytime today. Thank you so much for joining us today.
You're very welcome.